Life is a Marathon, Session 65.
Welcome to Life is a Marathon with Bruce Van Horn. This is where you'll get respected insight, information, and inspiration to help you not just survive, but to thrive and win at this marathon we call life.
Folks, I am super excited to have a very special guest with me today. I am talking to Mr. Stephen Webb, and Stephen and I have been internet pals for quite a while, and we have an interesting story about how we connect, but we're going to get into that in just a minute. But the fun thing that I want to share with you about this particular recording of this conversation is this is take two. Stephen and I actually did our interview last week, and when I went to edit it, I came to find out that in the middle of our conversation, which was about an hour long, but about 20 minutes into it, my computer decided to stop recording our conversation. So rather than just share a 20-minute conversation, Stephen was gracious enough to make a second appearance. Stephen, welcome to take two of our conversation on the Life is a Marathon show.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, it was funny, actually. Perhaps this time it would be better. You never know.
Exactly. You know, so maybe there was something that we said that the universe just didn't want shared, and that was its way of shutting it down.
So exactly
I've double and triple checked everything, so we have plenty of space on our hard drive this time, so we should be good to go. So, Stephen, you live in the sunny Cornwall, England. And we need to post some pictures of you at the beach, right?
Oh, I don't know if they want to see me on the beach, but pictures on the beach, definitely.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You know, so why don't we just jump into this and talk about how we met? And I'll do a little bit of an intro and let you take it from there. Stephen reached out to me. It was, right at a year ago. And my marathon training book called You Can Go the Distance had been out, and I got a tweet from this guy named Stephen Webb, and his Twitter handle was The Moving Road, and he said, "I've written a review about your book. You might want to take a look at it." And I often ignore a lot of tweets like that, but I chose to click on the link. And the headline immediately grabbed my attention. And I just sort of stared at it, and I was a little nervous to scroll down and actually read the review of my book. The headline read, "I'm paralyzed. Why would I read a book about marathon training?" And I read it, and I shared it with lots and lots and lots of people. And the overwhelming response was the same. You know, it wasn't that Stephen said great things about my book, but what Stephen said about my book said great things about Stephen. So Stephen, why don't you tell me what prompted you to write about marathon training?
Well, the thing is, when I started my Twitter account, and I was late to the game, and I only started it I think it was the start of New Year last year. And I like motivational quotes. I like people that lift people up. And there's a few people on Twitter, but your name kept coming up, whether I followed some of your followers or vice versa. But your tweets were shared regularly, and I kept looking. And then you'd done a special on your book. I can't remember if you'd taken it down to next to free or free. But I thought, well, why not? Me and my stepfather always wanted to run the London Marathon. I ran for Cornwall. I ran for my school. But I never got around to it because of my life-changing event. So, well, at the end of the day, I thought, well, I'll read the book, see what's in it. Because you were so motivational, it had to be something in it to take away. And that's what you read books for, is what you take away from them. And immediately on the first few pages, you tell a story of a young girl. And it just hooks you because it's not so much about marathon running as it is about life and getting through life and challenges. And I may not have thought I'd be that interested, but, you know, you grip me from beginning to end. And there's a lot of life lessons in there as well as learning to run a marathon.
You're gracious. It is a fun story, and a lot of people like that. You know, so I was blown away by the way that you took some of the principles that I had applied to marathon running, the mindset aspects of it, and you even, you know, mentioned some of the specific workouts that I recommended, and how you figured out a way to apply those to your day-to-day life. But let's go ahead and transition over to you and your life-changing event. And you are a marathon runner in every sense of the word. You know, just because of the journey that you have been on. And, you know, so when I think of the phrase life is a marathon and what I talk about, you know, what I know about you and our interactions over the last year, you were definitely somebody I knew I would bring on the show just to talk about some of the things that you've had to do to journey. So why don't you take us to when you were a teenager and what happened to you?
I will, yeah. Yeah, it was the summer of 1991. It was a hot summer in the UK. I was a typical teenager that year, spending most of my time on the beach, enjoying myself. I was heartbroken at the beginning of the year. I took an overdose. I ended up in hospital for a few days. But it was one of those summers where bad things were happening. But by the end of the summer, things were getting good. And then I went swimming September the 1st. It was late in the evening, half past 10. I know it was half past 10 because I looked at my watch when I stood on top of the wall. And just as I looked at my watch, 10:31, and I dived in. And it was apparent immediately that something was wrong when I hit the bottom. It hurt. I thought I broke my arms. I couldn't move anything. My friends dragged me out of the pool after what seemed an age. Just before they dragged me out, I was lying on the bottom of the pool thinking, the problem is you take enough breath for a few seconds underwater, and when you're young, you mess around on the water. So I dare say that my friends would have thought, you know, is he serious? Does he need help? So it had taken them a while.
Playing a joke on us.
Absolutely. So after a while, they realized something was wrong. I was lying down the bottom thinking, you know, is someone going to come and get me? And then everything just went warm and calm. Next thing I knew, I was lying on the edge of the pool. My friends are doing all sorts to just, you know, keep me alive and, you know, keep me with it. Then the ambulance turned up. We had quite a drive to the hospital. I think I remember my parents saying it took 2 hours, but we only lived about 3 miles, or the accident was only about 3 miles from the hospital. Hmm. So it took quite a lot of work, I think, to get me there. And then that night, they fitted what's called a halo on my head and attached 15 pounds of weight, which held my neck straight. Then I spent a couple of days in a local hospital, and then I was flown by helicopter 200 miles to a special spinal injuries unit in Salisbury. Now then, at that time, it's particularly difficult because my parents had to get in a car and drive the same journey. But there was no mobiles, there was no nothing. And when I went up in the helicopter, I was a very poorly person. They had no way of knowing what they were going to find when they got there. So it was difficult for them at the time. And then a couple of days into Salisbury, or it might have been the same day, I cannot quite remember, my breathing turned difficult. The consultants came to me and said, you know, we need to, what I heard was cut your throat open and put a tube in. And they probably didn't say it that way, but that's what I heard. And I refused. And my parents were saying, well, please, can you do it anyway? And they were saying, no, he's 18. He can refuse. So it was a long night. They were trying to get permission from a judge and everything. In the end, they decided to go ahead and do it as an emergency. And I remember saying to the consultant, just as he put the knife to cut, I remember looking up and saying to him, if you kill me, I'm going to come back and haunt you. And I often laugh now when I think about it and think the pressure I must have put on him. You know, you just wouldn't
imagine
want to
it. Well,
do that.
It probably was not the first time he heard that phrase, but no. I'm sure he was fine.
And then I went to intensive care unit, spent a week in there. I was unable to eat or drink anything. I would presume I was on a drip or something. But the one main thing I remember from that week stay there was they used to put like some lemon flavor on a little sponge and put it on my lips and my tongue. And because I couldn't drink or eat anything, that little thing meant so much. I almost lived hour to hour for that. It was just, it's the little things that make the big difference, you know, Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, after that week, I realized that with the trachea, I couldn't talk. So I was then limited to 3 months of basically tutting. If a nurse would come and say to me, do you want a drink? And it'd be like, tut, tut for one, for yes, and tut for no. And that's how I communicated for nearly 3 months. Mm. Lying flat on your back with 15 pounds tied to the top of your head. And then I had the trachea blocked off, and then I could actually speak, and it was like one word at a time and a deep breath. I remember phoning my parents, and at the time then, it wasn't just pass me a mobile. It was like they would reel it in this trolley with a phone on it. You had to find your 10p's, and it was like a big deal. You had to almost book a session on the phone because it was the only one on the ward. So I phoned my mum, and it was the first time she heard my voice in 3 months. And I can remember her crying on the phone. I can't remember what I said, or I can't remember, but that was pretty special. When you cannot talk, you know, although I seen her quite a lot, they used to come up every weekend and mum would stay the whole week with me because we lived so far away. But to be able to actually communicate was pretty magic. But about 3 months later, they started preparing me for getting out of bed the first time. It's quite, depending on how you break your neck and the different ways you're fixed. I wasn't fixed, so they had to be careful sitting me up slowly so that I did not faint or anything like that. And after a few weeks, they got me out of bed for 15 minutes. Well, I couldn't wait for this day to come, and they come and got me out of bed. It took them about 2 hours to get me up, and they wheeled me outside into the fresh air. And it's the one thing I remember clearly about my stay in hospital. When you haven't breathed fresh air for over 6 months, and just to feel the slightest breeze on your face now is just, you know, it's a pretty magic occasion. And it's amazing how much you appreciate, again, like I say, those little things. They put me back in bed, and I remember the nurses saying, you know, you're going to be pretty tired. I was like, no, I'm not going to be. 15 minutes, you know, anybody can do that. Well, I slept for 24 hours. That was it. My head hit the pillow and I was gone. I, you know, it might have been a bit longer. It might have been a bit less, but it was a long time. But then over the coming months, I slowly got out of bed 10 minutes longer each day. And until eventually, after 12 months of the whole stay in hospital, I came home. I came home with a pretty different perspective on life. I had a zest for living. I appreciated what I had, and I still went on and partied. I still, you know, got on in my life. But it didn't take long before all the normal things crept in and life just swept me away. And over the coming years after that, I think you explain it as you'd done one of the worst things you could do, and you got a job.
Right.
And life just took me on its own journey. I had my own fair share of heartbreaks. I had a business and I went bankrupt. I'd done a couple of challenges for charity. And that's when, although my life was difficult, it wasn't really that bad. You know, I was always fairly positive. But it wasn't until, bearing in mind, this is over 20 years, it wasn't until I was 40 that something happened that made me hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
The bankrupt didn't do it. The broken neck didn't do it. The teenage suicide didn't do it. The other heartbreaks didn't do it. And I don't know whether it was because of an age I was, whether I was vulnerable, but I hit rock bottom. Suddenly I had no feelings.
What was it that brought you there?
It was basically another heartache, a breakup. It's difficult to say why and things like that. It's because you don't actually know. It's just that was it, the final straw. I can't cope anymore.
You never know what it's going to be that, you know, is the final straw. You know, some people think they know what it is, and it's not. And, you know, but after a while, I think that, you know, what you're describing, you know, even though your circumstance is much more dramatic than most, because, you know, guys like me, I'm not in a wheelchair, but we suffer these setbacks. And so, first of all, I mean, the fact that you, you know, at 19 years old, breaking your neck, and your world just radically changes, at least from your physical circumstance, you didn't let that get you down. That in and of itself is an amazing story. You know, and then we think, okay, well, I can do this. I've got this. And we have a few successes, and then we have a few failures, and, you know, and that stings a little bit, but then you get back up and you keep going. But then as you start to lose a little bit of the momentum, and you take a couple more blows to the midsection that knock your wind out, you just get tired. You know, when you keep getting knocked to the mat in a boxing ring, to use that analogy, you know, for a while you can keep getting up, and you keep getting up, and at some point, you know, you don't know what that last punch is, but at some point you just decide, you know what, is it really worth getting up again?
It's not even the biggest punch.
Yeah, I'm just going to get punched again. I think I'm just going to lay here.
Exactly. That explains it perfectly. And it's almost like everybody would be like, why was it that one thing that knocked you right out? It doesn't have to be the biggest final punch. It doesn't have to be. It's just the one too many.
Yeah, it was it was that one little I've seen metaphors where sometimes you see this sort of teeter-totter that's perfectly balanced, and then a little butterfly is floating through the air and it lands on one side, and that was enough to tilt the scale.
I know. It's so easy to judge someone when they do hit rock bottom and they go, well, you've been through so much in life, what's wrong with you? Well, yeah. It was the accumulation of everything. Well, this, I didn't know at the time, but this was the best opportunity I had. But I couldn't sleep. I couldn't stop thinking. I had every thought in my mind. I was making stuff up. And I had to stop these thoughts. They were 24/7. So I started reading. The funny thing is, I hadn't really read since school because I was labeled as dyslexic when I was 5 or 6. So I didn't believe I could, or at least in a good way anyway. So apart from the faraway tree to my daughter, which took me 6 months, And then when I was reading, I read self-help books, and I read As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. And he talks about everything starts with a thought, and everything we are is in our mind. And it made sense. And this gave me the ability to realize that I was responsible for everything. It was me that wasn't causing what happened to me, but how I was reacting to what happened to me is how my life would either go good or bad.
Exactly.
And over the coming months after that, this was before I started Twitter and such like, I started mindfulness, I started meditating, I started to focus on my breath and just taking a step back and trying to focus my mind on what was important, on gratitude and appreciation, as opposed to all the bad things. And although I was positive, it's still easy to get into that circle of bad thought. Why is it happening to me? And that was when I just learned a lot about humans and what we do. And, you know, I was on this massive discovery of how humans think and what humans do. And I just got absolutely fascinated by it. And that's what led me to doing courses and signing up to different things. And suddenly I had this new zest for life and zest for knowledge. And it was amazing because it was the first time I realized I really didn't know anything. Up until then, I thought I knew everything. I wrote a blog, and it was basically where I used to be. And, you know, I used to think I was a doctor. I used to think I was a vet. I used to think I was anybody come to me with a problem, I had the answer. And I never questioned whether my answer was the truth or not. It was, you know, I knew how to sort their lives. But yeah, and then over the coming months, I learned about there's three types of people. And there's like, you got the caged people that don't know they're locked in some kind of victim mode that life's just taking them away with them. Then you've got the comfortable people that are doing okay. And then you've got the free people that think for themselves, that can actually realize that they can do anything in life and they believe in themselves to be able to go out and get what they want. And the easiest way of explaining I found is at about the time you leave school, you get into like a taxi, but the driver isn't you. The driver's somebody else. And you spend your whole life, or certainly a big part of it, being driven around by this person that thinks they know what's best for you, which is your big subconscious. Based on what you always have done, this subconscious mind thinks, you know, well, you know, you've always had a cigarette, that's what you want. You've always had a drink in these occasions, that's what you want. You've always thought negatively, that's what I'll help you do. So you're controlled by this subconscious mind, and you don't even realize it. I never realized it at all, never even thought about it. And then doing all these, reading all these different books by these different authors that have different ways of explaining why we do all these different things, that's when I realized that tolerance for other people, and that was my big breakthrough really, was when you realized everybody's on different levels. Everybody has their own problems. And, you know, when someone shouts at you for cutting them up on the road, they're not angry at you. It's something in their lives at the time that they're struggling with.
Exactly.
You know, and that's where it comes down to. With these different levels of people, you know, you've got like a 4-year-old and a 40-year-old on two different levels. We can see that. we can see one's got more experience than the other. But we don't very often see two 40-year-olds on different levels. And that's what was important with the breakthrough of me. Instead of me looking at everybody and going, well, you should know this. You know, you should know how to think positively. You should know how to sort your life out. Well, two people are just not, just because they're 40, it doesn't mean to say they've had the same life experiences.
Exactly.
So for one person to do a certain thing is incredibly hard. For another person, it's easy. But we judge them all the time.
Yeah, we do.
We want
everybody to be like us.
Yes. Yeah. We see the world the way we are.
Wouldn't it be a better place if everybody were just like you and me, Stephen?
Oh, I'm not sure about everybody like me.
Right. Yeah, but that, yes, that's the mindset that we all sort of carry around.
And, we do, yeah. And we see everything the way we are. And if it isn't the way we are, we get frustrated with it.
Exactly.
Like the common sense thing, you know, hasn't anybody got any common sense? Well, we've all got it. It's just not the same as mine.
Exactly.
But the thing is, I then started looking at my true self and who I am. And I realized partly why my disability didn't get me down. First of all, I didn't concentrate on the fact that I wasn't a top footballer. It wasn't something that ever occurred to me. And I didn't daily think, oh, I cannot do this. If I had ideas to do something, it was based on my ability as opposed to the opposite. The funny thing is, not realizing who you are, a friend of mine said to me the other day, she was talking about another friend of hers that had problems. And she said, well, you have your problems too. And I was like, well, what problems do I have? You know, I'm essentially a positive person. Yes, I've got my flaws. I still think I know everything on occasion. I still react. And she goes, well, no. I said, well, what problems have I got? And she says, well, you're in a wheelchair.
And I... problem.
The elephant in the room. It never occurred to me that she could see that. My body isn't who I am. And I think that's important. You know, if we define our better...
Exactly. Say that one more time slowly so everybody can hear that.
My body is not who I am.
Exactly.
We look in the mirror and we see a body and we do really define it by... You know, when I look in the mirror, I see a fat belly, I see my legs, I see all this. But also there's courage and there's strength there and there's survival there and there's the whole me there. And that's what you've got to concentrate on. And the problem is, if you see yourself as a victim, if you see yourself as a negative person or a person that doesn't believe in themselves, that's the way other people will see you as well. People, when they first meet me, they'll see the wheelchair, they'll see another smiling, injured person. But over given two or three encounters, they'll see me the way I see myself. If I come over as a positive, happy person, they'll stop saying, oh, Stephen in the wheelchair. They'll say, oh, Stephen, oh, he's so positive and happy, you know. And it's important to have an outlook in a positive way, because if you don't, you just get swept along in that negative. For example, if you are negative and you meet people, they'll be negative with you because people around you will end up the same as what you are. It's not that they're like it. It's just that you'll bring them to your level.
Yeah, you know, there's no woo-woo magic to the law of attraction. You know, it's a phrase that gets used a lot now to think, well, oh, well, you know, I am going to manifest into my life all of these wonderful things by thinking these wonderful thoughts. And, you know, well, while there is a truth to that, that we do attract into our lives, the energy that we put out there, there's a much more practical application to it. And you're describing it beautifully. You know, if your world, you know, the world in which we live is the world in that we see through the lens of, you know, of our attitude. You know, our eyes are not just these optic nerves that bring in everything into our brain that we
exactly
see.
It's not some,
you know, our brain filters out the things that we don't want to see, and it focuses on the things that we do want to see. And so if we have a negative, pessimistic, everything always goes wrong mindset, those are the things that our brain is trained to see. And so we will see that in other people, and other people will see that in us. So you've nailed it.
Exactly. The thing is that the other important thing I found out with the subconscious mind, it has no right and wrong. If you take a habit, a bad habit or a good habit, your subconscious mind doesn't care if it's bad or good. It just cares whether you're used to doing it. And if you're used to doing it, it will try to make you do it. It has no moral compass. But yeah, right. That's, you know, we are a sum of our habits, someone once said. And that is so true. The other thing that's I find really important is perspective. Many people might see someone else's point of view, but to actually put life into perspective sometimes isn't done very often. I think it was Jack Kornfield had a little story about a lady in a parking lot. I don't know if you ever heard this one.
No, I don't think so.
He was walking across the parking lot and this woman came over to him and said, "I've got a starving baby at home and I need some money, and I have no way of getting money, and the baby hasn't eaten for days." And so he got $20 out of his pocket and he gave to the lady. Just as he was walking off, another guy came over to him and said, "You know, you've just been ripped off." He said, "What do you mean?" "Well, she's a druggie. She's not... she'll go and buy alcohol or buy drugs. She's, you know, there's no starving baby at home." And he said, "That's the best news I've heard all day." "What, that you've been ripped off?" He goes, "No, that there's no starving baby at home."
Right.
And yeah, it's perspective.
It is perspective. I love that story. You know, that, you know, what a great way to look at it. I heard recently that, you know, think about some really disgusting bug. You know, none of us like cockroaches, right? You know, so you see a cockroach scampering across your kitchen floor, you know, you go, "Ew, gross," or whatever. You know, while you certainly don't want to live in a home that is infested with cockroaches, but wouldn't it be cool to be able to see something that would normally disgust you and be able to say, "Wow, what an amazing thing it is to live in a world where things as interesting as cockroaches exist."
Exactly. Exactly that.
Yeah, and not to just, you know, this is something that, you know, destroys the quality of my life, living in a world full of cockroaches. If all the cockroaches would be gone, then wouldn't our lives be so much better? Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Substitute cockroaches with whatever it is that you think that if it was gone from your life would be better. You know, wouldn't it be easier to change your thinking into not judging the cockroach? And, you know, do what you can to not have your life affected by the cockroach, but it's easier to change our thoughts and in doing so change our lives, than it is to, you know, what unfortunately we spend so much time and energy trying to change our circumstances and trying to change other people to suit our particular worldview or mindset. And it's just not going to happen. We live a life of frustration when we try to change other people. Should we try to better our circumstances in whatever way we can? Yeah. But when we come to a level of acceptance of our circumstance and be grateful for what we have right now, you know, part of my story, and I know it's part of yours, but, you know, part of my personal journey is that when I started being thankful for what I had, which was counterintuitive, you know, it's like sailing a sailboat. You know, it doesn't make logical sense when you're sailing a sailboat. If you want to go to the right, you have to push the rudder to the left.
Yeah.
You know, so when your life is really, really bad and hard, and bad is just a label, but when, from our perspective, life is really bad and difficult and it is absolutely not what you want, fighting it and being upset about it is just focusing on the bad stuff. And that's what you tend to get more of. And so when I recognized that and I started to be thankful for the cockroach in my life, then my world changed, my perspective changed. And as you express gratitude, you know, there's not a direct corollary formula that works, but in general, I started to receive into my life more things for which to be grateful. And now the truth of the matter is that those things were probably always there. I just wasn't paying attention to them.
Absolutely. It's all you got to have is a simple cold to realize what, like you've just had, realize what gratitude for having no cough or breathing clearly.
Breathing clearly for granted every single day.
It's amazing and interesting you say you spend your life trying to make other people think the way you do, because you think if you can improve their lives, you'll be better. I spent 20 years trying to do that. It didn't work.
I had an interesting conversation with a guy who, you know, and I was able to relate to where he was, simply because I've gone through lots of different stages in my personal journey. But he and I were having a conversation, and he was a self-declared atheist, and I was when I was a teenager in my younger years. I had a lot of cognitive dissonance around this idea of God, and if God exists, why is there suffering? And you know, if God is loving and all powerful, you know, why does a great guy named Stephen Webb dive into a pool and break his neck? So therefore, God must not exist. And the logic is seriously flawed. But when you're a teenager, you know, all your logic is seriously flawed.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was upset with Christians, and it really didn't matter what the religion was. You know, that we were all, you know, just trying to convert everybody to our way of thinking. And I said, but isn't that exactly what you're doing? Don't you want everybody to have the same belief that there isn't a God as you do? Because you'd be more comfortable, wouldn't you? Oh, well, no, that's not what I'm talking. Yeah. But I caught him, and he knew I had caught him. And that's what, you know, it's just the way we are. But like you said, you know, once you realize that you can, instead of judging people and judging circumstances, and my goodness, you know, how I'm sure that you encounter it, you know, but, you know, so people will look at you and see you in a wheelchair and immediately make some kind of judgment about you. And, you know, so as we, you know, I know my life is certainly much more relaxed as I've come to realize that, you know, everybody is where they are, and that's okay.
Exactly. it's important that, having spent so much time telling people how they should think, it's really important to remember people don't care what you say over time. They don't care how much you preach to them. But what they do care is how you make them feel. Exactly. People remember the feeling you leave, and whether or not you've brightened their day or you've made it worse for them. And in my transition, or in my journey of self-discovery, which I'm still only so part of the way into it, you know, hopefully it's a lifelong thing. One of the decisions I made is I don't want anybody to come into my life, whether or not it's for a cup of coffee or any other reason, and to leave worse. Now then, I can always say that I'm not going to put them down, but I would try to lift them if I can. And that I think is important, you know. It doesn't matter where they're coming from or what they're doing. You don't have to make their life worse.
Exactly.
The next step of my journey was I decided to write a book.
Yeah, tell us about your book.
I was going to write my life story, and I decided against it after I started writing this little list of things I did. And instead, I started writing what I learned and some of the things I've been talking to you about. So I wrote a book. It was The Moving Mode, because basically that's life. You know, there's no straight road. It moves, it wobbles, it does all the other things. So The Moving Road, start your own journey to success in 4 simple steps. Then the simple steps we all kind of know, you know, set a goal, set a direction, and then apply yourself to it. But if it's that simple, why don't people do it? It's because they got to understand why they do the current things they do. And that's why I tackle in the book, why you go and do the same job again in day in and day out when you don't want to. Why you wait for the pay rise and you think that's going to solve all your problems. So the book's available now on Amazon. If you go there, The Moving Road.
I was so appreciative that you sent me an advance reader copy of it. And folks, it's a great book. And there are going to be links in the show notes to it. It's The Moving Road. First of all, I love the metaphor. It is a great book.
It's on discount at the moment because I could do with some reviews. The thing is, I don't mind whether anybody goes and buys it or not. If they go to my website and email me their story and what they want to do with their lives, I'll email them a copy, Bruce. I really will. You know, I want them to succeed. I want them to lift themselves. I'm doing okay.
Great offer.
You know, it's about helping others, and that's what I enjoy doing.
Well, folks listening, there's your call to action. So, you know, go over to Stephen Webb's website, which is called themovingroad.com, and there's a contact link there. So fill out that contact form and tell Stephen about how you want to change your life like he's changed his, and he'll send you a copy of his book. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. I don't need a life story. Just, you know, even if it's one sentence, you know, this is what I'm going through. Help me.
Great. Great. So you can get to Stephen, because I definitely want you to interact. His story is amazing, and absolutely get his book. I think that you should go to Amazon or wherever else it's available and buy the book to help support Stephen. But if that's not something that you can do right now, then shoot Stephen a message, and he'll send you one. But it's a message that you need to hear. So you can, themovingroad.com is his website. On Twitter, he is The Moving Road. And I should know this, but are you on Facebook?
I am. Facebook.com/themovingroad.
Love the There's simplicity a pattern of that, there. Right? Great. There is a pattern, right? I love it. Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me and for take two. And I do believe that this, You know, take two is definitely better than our take one was, although that was a lot of fun. But we covered all of the same ground just in a little different way. But I love, you know, some of the big takeaways that I heard you say, especially here toward the end, was that your perception of yourself, you know, what you think about yourself and the world in which you live, and what you think about other people in general, is how other people will see you. And so if you see yourself as a poor victim who has spent, you know, his entire adult life in a wheelchair, then that's how people are going to see you. And is that how people want to see you? And so if you're, you know, one of the things that I tweet out that, it gets retweeted a lot, so I know it resonates with people, but you know, I always get the phrase "easier said than done."
That's
You know,
exactly.
and all change is, right? You know, so any amount of change is going to be easier said than done. So please don't tweet "easier said than done" to one of my motivational tweets when I'm trying to get you to change your life for the better.
There's
But
one thing, Bruce, if I can leave with my advice for one thing, and that is
absolutely.
it seems easy for us to have our chat about positive and be, but we're not always like this. You know, there's
No.
days when we wake up and lifting our head off the pillow is difficult. That sometimes we say, you know, why me? You know, why is it happening to me again? And all the other things. It's not, I'm just saying, it's not easy for us either. It's not like a life thing that we woke up, we're positive people. So anybody can do it. It's just a matter of being aware of their current situation and being aware that life can be different. And
It
then
can
believe in
be.
yourself. And, you know, other people believe in you. People tell you that you're great and that you can do these things. But unless you believe in yourself, unless you listen to them, nothing will change.
You know, it's about our diet, and you know, so what we feed our bodies is what ultimately our bodies wind up looking like, but even more so, what we feed our minds, you know, is what our minds wind up looking like. And so, folks, you know, read everything that Stephen has to say, adopt this mindset of, you know, that you do not be defined by your circumstances. You are not your body. You are a mind and soul and spirit that happens to occupy a body. Your body is, you know, I like to use a metaphor. The body is just it's the vehicle that takes me to where my mind and my soul and my spirit want to go. And so I have this relationship with my body, you know, just like I have to take care of my car. You know, I've got to keep air in the tires, I've got to change the oil, I've got to change the gas. And as I take care of my car, you know, I can, you know, with a reasonable amount of confidence, I can get in my car at any moment and drive pretty much wherever I want to go. You know, and so my body is the same way. And you know, so it's Stephen, you've shared some
Exactly.
amazing stuff with us. So thank you for being that person in my life, and thank you for reaching out to me with that great review for the book. And you know, again, you know, the overwhelming thought when I read the book, or read your review of my book, is was not a anywhere close to, oh wow, look at him saying great things about me in my book. It's just that the words that you said and the way you apply them to your life, my thought was, wow, this is an amazing guy. This is a guy who is a marathon runner in every sense of the word. So thank you for being with us, folks. Hop over to the movingroad.com, take Stephen up on his offer to get a free copy of his book, or hop out to amazon.com in the United States, or amazon.co.uk in the UK, or I would imagine like all of the Amazons, wherever you are in the world.
It is,
So
yes.
whatever your international version of Amazon is, His book is available there, and it's called The Moving Road. Stephen is with a V, so it's Steven, Webb with two Bs, Webb.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Bruce. I've enjoyed it. Brilliant.
You have a great day, and we will continue this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Take care, my friend.
Bye.
What an amazing guy. My life is so blessed by people like Stephen Webb. You know, the things that I've been through, you know, I dealt with cancer in this past year. I was diagnosed right at a year ago on February 17th of 2014. I had my surgery in April of 2014. And so many months of recovery. So I've been through some very trying physical situations just this year, and many difficult situations situationally in my life. But when I look at guys like Stephen and the things that he's been through and the mindset that he had at the very beginning when he first broke his neck at 19 years old, you know, he had many years where, you know, it didn't faze him. It just, he still had this amazing outlook on life. And then, you know, he had circumstances like the rest of us experienced circumstances while he was in the wheelchair with a broken neck and not able to move. So the guy is just amazing because I love the story where he said, you know, it never even occurred to him that he was in a wheelchair. And the fact that he just, that phrase, he said, I am not my body. You know, how many of us have our self-image, our self-perception wrapped up in our body? Guys do it. I know so many women. It's just the way culture tends to push us towards, you know, we have to look amazing or we're, you know, substandard as human beings. And, you know, I love Stephen's outlook. I love his perception, just his whole mindset on life. So please take Stephen up on his offer to get a copy of his book. I know that you will be blessed by it. Hop over to themovingroad.com. All the links are in the show notes, but as he said, everything is The Moving Road. So his website is themovingroad.com. His Twitter handle is The Moving Road. And on Facebook, he's also /The Moving Road. Please interact with Stephen. Let him know how much his story has touched your life, because I know it touched mine in a very, very deep way. So thank you for taking the time to listen to us. So that's a wrap for session 65. If you have not had an opportunity to nominate me for a Shorty Award, there's another week left that you can do that, depending on when you're listening to this. The nominations end on February 19th of 2015, and you can do so by just going to lifeisamarathon.com/shorty. And that'll take you over to the Shorty Awards page and just fill out a little reason as to why you think that I should win the award and click tweet. And it will just go into the universe and I'll be nominated. And it'll be an awesome thing. I'm very excited about it. And I truly appreciate just the wonderful things that people are saying about this show and about me. So thank you so much for your kind words. If you would like to get a copy of my affirmations recording so that you can have positive thoughts in your earbuds all the time, and as you're listening to them, you can own them as your own and really start to incorporate positive self-talk into your life to help eradicate the negative self-talk and the limiting beliefs, if that's your pattern of talking to yourself, go to brucevanhorn.com/affirmations and download your copy of the recordings today. And as I mentioned in the last episode, I am going to be gone to the Caribbean for the next 7 days. I do plan to do a couple shows from the Princess cruise ship that we're going to be on. I am the guest speaker and life coach for a 7-day Caribbean cruise. I believe there's about 125 people who have registered, many of whom are listeners to this podcast back when I was promoting it in the fall. So I'm looking forward to making some real life connections. Many of you who are coming have, we've established relationships via Twitter or Facebook, but we are going to be able to meet face to face in person and spend some quality time together. And I'm so excited about this opportunity. If you would like to join me on the next Run for Fun cruise, we're going to be doing an Alaska cruise in June. So hop over to runforfuncruise.com for all the information about that. And likewise, if you are an event planner or you want to host some kind of event or would simply like me to come speak to your employees, to your group, your association, wherever two or more people are gathered, I can certainly be there and would love the opportunity to share many of the concepts that I share on this show, but do it in real life. And so that's what I really, really enjoy. I love the podcast, but I love talking about these things in a real live setting. So if you've got something coming up in 2015 or into 2016, I'm already starting to book some speaking events into next year. So if you would like to have me come to speak at an event of yours, just reach out to me. Go to brucevanhorn.com and click on the contact form and fill out that form and just tell me more information about you and we'll start the dialogue. So thank you so much for going the distance. You can get the show notes for this at lifeisamarathon.com/session65. Interact with me on Twitter at lifeis262 or on Facebook at /lifeisamarathon. I love you. I want you to embrace all of the things that Stephen said and realize that the thoughts that you think about yourself, the way you perceive yourself is the kind of energy that you'll radiate out into the universe, which causes other people to see you and interact with you in a similar light. And so if you want people to see you as an awesome, beautiful, loving person, it's got to start with you. You have to see yourself as an awesome, loving, beautiful, beautiful person. We are not our bodies. We are soul and mind and spirit, and we all are beautiful and lovable and capable. So let's all do this, okay? Let's think wonderful thoughts about ourselves because we really are wonderful creations. I love you. Life is a marathon, so let's train for it.